AM Toronto is TSN 1050 and iHeartRadio station. The Leafs live here. This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Final hour Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and now up on TSN 2, Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. Look who's all grown up over there, Jamie Noodles McLennan. New gear at 6 o'clock. What happened to the velvet suit, the velvet fog?
Well, I had it on last segment, but I don't think you were looking at your return. But it got too hot. Like, that sweatshirt is hot. Like, it's nice and toasty, but it is...
Buddy, I love you, but that's horrible looking. You can't wear. Like, you wear that around the house, but you ever want to go to lunch in that? Like, I'll walk right to my car. I'm not ever doing that.
I think you would love it if I walked in to that old the place.
Only if you get the Geppetto Ninja shoes and you tell people off.
Yeah, well, I need the zip.
How did that come about? Did you just say to Steph, "I want to get that thing"?
No, I just ordered it myself. I zoom around online a lot, and I came across it, and I'm like, looks really comfortable.
I don't dispute the comfort level. No one can. We can talk about styles. We can talk about mailing in life all we want. Velvet is as comfortable as you're ever going to dress yourself in.
I remember when I made it to the NHL, I thought I needed satin sheets. I thought that was the big league move.
Yeah,
like, you could literally just hop on that. You would slide right off the other side of it. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I never understood, like, I get it. It's expensive. It feels good or whatever, but I don't know. Satin sheets? How much do they cost for, like, a king-size bed?
Probably expensive.
Do you think I cared?
Obviously not at that point. Had to have them. 19 years old, got to have satin sheets.
It's pretty expensive at that point, but I don't think they're that comfortable. That's the thing.
No, they're awful.
But, like, velvet suits or velour or however you want to.
The velour. I like velour. That. That's classier than velvet.
I think this one was velour.
Yeah, velour. I like that. Yeah, I support it. I'm with you, Noodles. I'll grab a tracksuit myself and we can fire up velour Thursdays or
it's
something.
It's so comfortable.
Forward.
So, like, we need dress coats made of that. That's what we need.
Yeah.
The alumni. Maybe I could reach out to one of the teams, like maybe the Flames have a little black and red there. I could get a velvet dress coat for an alumni coat.
That's styles, man. Like, you get, you put a dress coat with some velvet, so not the whole thing necessarily.
Maybe a collar, velvet collar.
Yeah, now you're talking.
Lapel? Yeah.
I like it. I support it. Yeah. So I mentioned this clip. We'll play it here. Doc Rivers is an awesome interview. Like, he seems like a great guy. You know, it's not, obviously, we don't know him personally. I don't know him personally, but easy guy to like. And I have to believe there's a backstory here where he's doing these Zoom calls all the time. There's a guy by the name of Jackson Frank who covers the team down in Philly. And they're doing a Zoom call yesterday. And I don't know how he picked this off. I don't know if there's a backstory. I don't know if there's a two-way video. Maybe he can see it. Maybe two-way visual. And somehow he can get into this guy's house and he knows exactly what's going on. But this is what happened last night down in Philly.
Hey, Doc. Pretty prolific first half from you guys without Ben, and then Joel kind of a
Jackson. Are you in bed right now?
I am laying on my bed. Yeah.
Jesus Christ, Jackson. All right, I'm sorry.
How do you admit to that? Like, how do you not realize that at that time you have
the
to say?
Bigger question no. is Brian. How do you go on the Zoom with? Obviously, the guy, Doc, could see him lying in his bed, because why else would he say that? You can't tell by someone's voice.
I don't know.
Why would you set yourself up for that unless you're looking for someone to goof on you?
Well, that's, I guess, what I'm saying is, if there is visual, you cannot be laying on your bed asking a question. Like, when other colleagues of yours, you're talking to the head coach of the team that you cover, and you're laying in bed. Ultimately, it's innocent. But it just seems like you're putting yourself in a position where you're going to get grilled for it.
Dude, there's only one better question. It was at a major. It might have been the Aussie Open years ago. And the guy's like, "How did you come out on top today?" And the guy had like a French accent. And he was like, "Were you here? Did you watch the match? I lost." and he actually lost the match. And the guy wasn't even at the match. He just,
you're right.
You know, he's on the SportsCenter top 10 all the time.
Oh, for
he's
sure.
Like, he's like, what are you talking about? The win? He's like, yeah, how did you win today? He's like, I didn't win. I lost. And then he's like, questions en français rest of the way. Thank you.
Yeah, lost in translation. That is a great clip.
That's tough, though.
So awkward. That is,
I mean, we've all had some tough questions at one point of our broadcasting career, but there have been a few doozies where, you know, somebody comes out of left field and – everyone else in the scrum is like, what the hell is that?
Yeah,
dude, there was one kid from North Carolina State that just had no idea. And we got waxed 8-1. And he just puts the microphone in my face. He goes, how's that feel? I go, pardon me? He goes, how'd that feel out there tonight? I go, you know why you don't know how that feels? It's because you're a loser and you've never played sports before. And well, that's the stupidest question I've ever heard in my life. We just lost. And I went off on a tangent. But that's the only time I did it.
Yeah,
now I have more respect for the profession.
Of course, yeah, because we're all a part of it now. I wonder if, in a weird way, he was like, I'm going to provoke this guy.
It was the way he asked it. We just got waxed 8-1 by like a big team. You're supposed to play well. You're supposed to give. And he's like, how'd that feel, by the way?
Yeah, chew on that.
And I said, pardon me? I just wanted to stuff him in a garbage can.
Yeah, exactly.
Meanwhile, he probably got a great sound bite that he sent back to the studio. He was like, wait,
dude, no
hear
kidding.
This.
On my way home, all my buddies were texting me saying, we are hearing some absolute nonsense on the post-game show right now. What the hell is going on down there?
Yeah.
And I just said there was some pigeon in there just being an idiot. Anyway, we got a guest on the line.
Yeah, we do. Here he is from the Starting Nine podcast, longtime MLB pitcher. One of our favorites, Dallas Braden. Dallas, at any point in your career, did you have confrontations with like a media member who just asked you the most, you know, ridiculous question after a tough start or anything along those lines?
No, because if we're being honest, playing in Oakland, the media, you know, it was like I had like three or four of my closest friends asking me questions, and that was about it. The media scrum lasted all of about 36 seconds, and we out, and that was it. So, no, I didn't, not until after I had a dust-up with a guy who used to play baseball in New York did I have any sort of questions like that fired at me. But I understand the media's got a job. They're digging. You know, they're gonna put it on a tee for you. It's up to you to take your hacks or maybe pass, you know?
Did you play with anybody that was just like that had to deal with the media on a regular basis that just dreaded it? Now that I'm out of like pro sports, I'm like, I think about it obviously different. I'm like, do you not have a couple minutes? But then when I think back to it, I'm like, dealing with it every single day, you get sick of it. Did you have any teammates that were just miserable with the media and couldn't stand doing it?
Well, just guys that you know have to – they're going to have to answer questions regardless of their own performance, regardless of the team's performance, because they're just sort of that mouthpiece to the fans from the franchise, right? You want to hear from the star guy. And, I mean, this isn't a knock on anybody that I played with. I just don't know that – I played with anybody that had to answer those questions day in and day out. And if there was somebody that locker was being hounded, these guys were great about it. That's part of the cool thing about playing specifically for the Oakland A's is you got a bunch of characters who are going to let it fly one way or the other. And if it's a soundbite on Friday night and just a quote on Saturday, so be it. But it's a lot of personality and not a whole lot of bark.
What about when you threw your perfect game? You know, you would have been getting requests from like shows like this, and you probably were like, I can't do it. Like, I'm not coming on with you guys because ESPN is calling and Fox is calling. Like, that is such a monumental moment in the history of the sport. What was your PR person thinking the next day or that night when they were dealing with requests after you threw a perfect game?
Oh, they absolutely hated me. You got to understand. Like, not happen to, again, small market, like I said, three or four interviews after a ball game that you started, and that's about it. So when something like that happens, it kind of feels like your entire world gets flipped upside down. It's like, yo, Sesame Street's calling. They want to talk to you. Like, what are we? Are we sniffing Bitbird? What are we doing? And like, it was a little bit of a scramble. But look, if we're being real, I've always said the idea that anybody wants to talk to you and wants to ring your phone and hear what you have to say about anything and stick a microphone in front of your face and let you give your opinion on things that people might care about, you should always just be humbled and take advantage of that, because that day will inevitably come to an end and you're just going to be screaming into the wind.
Yep. Well, that's the truth, man. That is the truth. We're chatting with Dallas Braden from the Starting Nine podcast, longtime MLB pitcher. This Fernando Tatis Jr. contract is historic in nature as well, based on the scope of it. I mean, only Mike Trout, Mookie Betts signed a larger deal in terms of total money, and he has not even played 162 games in the bigs. He's played 143 major league games, 629 plate appearances. They still had, I believe, 5 years of arbitration rights where they could have squeezed this guy if they wanted to. I think it's just a massive gamble. I love him. I love his personality. I think they'll sell a ton of jerseys. They were probably going to do that anyway. What do you make of this deal, and how do you feel about it from the Padres standpoint and from Tatis Jr.'s standpoint?
Well, there are a few different lenses to look at this thing through. First and foremost, from the Padres fan base. This is a fan base that has had some stars in their day, some stars in their past. They were thirsty for another. They're thirsty for a winning brand of baseball. And that's exactly what Tatis Jr. represents and fulfills, is that void on multiple levels to a fan base that frankly, deserves it. They do. They deserve it. And so that's box checked number one. And you think about from an organizational standpoint, to the point you just made, they were going to be able to sell jerseys. They were able to make that money on Tatis Jr. over the next 5 years, and the things that he did on the baseball field would probably only increase their return on investment if they were to just kind of go status quo through the ARB process and through the, you know, and write those checks as they needed to. But what they've done is said, you know what? We want to create a culture, and that's what we've been trying to do here for a while, and this kind of move signifies that. It lets everybody in that room know that we mean business, because they've got guys, I mean, it feels like they've got 10 guys that are locked up 3 years or more that are considered a part of this nucleus, this core. And when you have that, and you've got a couple guys like Machado going to be there for a decade, Tatis Jr., like his children are going to be playing third and second base around him. Like, it's ridiculous the attention that they paid and the emphasis that they put on keeping these guys in-house and making them happy, allowing them, again, to create that culture that I'm talking about. So from an organizational standpoint, they feel like this is a check they can easily write, already getting a vibe for what Tatis is bringing to the field production-wise. And then off the field, it's time you start factoring that in. And if San Diego has, and they've got a game plan on how to get butts in the seats, because that dude right there playing shortstop has them jumping turnstiles to get in there, well, then that's how they're going to make their money back if they, for some reason, would have found themselves on the south end of this investment. But I don't think that's going to be the case.
So which player do you think is more emotional one way or the other when you see a deal like this? Tatis gets 14 years, $340 million. Is it Ronald Acuna, who signed a 10-year deal for $100 million, and you could argue is as valuable of a player, or certainly they're both in the same range, or is it Juan Soto, who's like, I'm going to make $300 million? You know, like, which one is it? Who's freaking out more based on what happened with Tatis?
It's Juan Soto, because if you are still of the mindset that Acuna Jr. signed on the dotted line because after a certain point in time, X amount of dollars doesn't make a difference to an individual, you and I are not the ones to be making that call for Acuna Jr. He is, and he made that call for him and his family and their families and their families and their families to come after that. So maybe in his mind, he's doing just fine. And sure, from the business end, you look back on that and go, yeah, but that's about a $200+ million gap we're talking about here.
No kidding.
And sure, that can absolutely stick with you. But again, one man's peace and one man's peace of mind, and his bank account could be overflowing regardless of how many commas are in it. And from a Soto's perspective, yeah, you have now had the bar set, and based on what you're doing, you're already being heralded as the best hitter in baseball. Either side of the dish, nobody's talking about your age. Doesn't matter. You're the guy. You're the pure of the big league crop. Like, that right there, that has you excited because you just saw what this man, Tatis Jr., has done, as you guys have pointed out, in less than 162 games, or roughly around that. Mm-hmm. And we've already seen Juan Soto burst on the scene and do what he's done on the game's biggest stage.
Yeah, Soto's numbers are just insane, man. He had a 1.185 OPS last year on top of 900-plus the previous 2 years. World Series, we all know his story. He's going to get paid for sure. With Dallas Braden, you know, Toronto, they're not up here. The Blue Jays are going to be in Dunedin to start the year, probably end up in Buffalo for a month or two, and then hopefully get back up here. But there's a lot of excitement. You know, the staff is not going to be great. You know, there's going to be patchwork here in terms of the back end of the starting rotation, and hopefully the bullpen improves on where they were a year ago. But 1 through 9, you know, if we're talking bats, the Blue Jays feel very confident that they can hit with anybody. How do you feel about the way they set up and the bats that they currently have coming into this new season?
Well, I mean, let's be real. I'm on the record as saying that George Springer, in today's game right now, the most powerful leadoff hitter. And when I say powerful, I don't mean just let's get him under the bench press and see how much. I mean his ability to make it 1-0 right now, one pitch into the ball game. Nobody else is really packing that punch. Acuña Jr., probably a well more rounded ball player, well more rounded game altogether. He also hits in the leadoff spot. But what George Springer has done over the course of his career in that position, netting him what I think he's second all time in leadoff homers next to the Man of Steel himself, Ricky Henderson. And then you go down through that lineup, a shortstop that I'd like to think is just on loan right now from the Oakland A's, Marcus Semien.
Yep.
If he gets back to what he is capable of doing, what he showed he's capable of doing in a career year in 19, that is a scary 1-2 punch, because then you've got the legacy Jays coming up behind him, right? The Flo Bichettes, Teoscar, you've got Vlad Cakes behind him, Biggio's going to make some noise. I mean, it's a lot of solid young dudes. I mean, Rowdy Tellez,
yep.
The California, the Elk Grove native, the thundering herd, big fella, is hitting eights for you, Rowdy Tellez. Like, that's a decent spot to have that big left-handed bat, if you're asking me. So as far as how the Jays' offense shakes up, they're poised, in my opinion, to make some noise.
What about when the guys run into the dugout and the pitcher goes out there? Can they pitch, Dallas?
I think they're going to be fine. I look, Ryu, you got the young kid Pearson, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just got Matts over there. You're going to need Matts to step it up. So I can understand why you might balk at, you know, well, what's it look like after Ryu and Robbie Ray? Because, look, you were excited about Robbie Ray. I feel like you guys got him 12:01 the day free agency opened up. It was signed Robbie Ray, done. The bullpen does leave maybe some questions. You got Kirby, right? You locked up Kirby.
Yep.
From there, maybe it's about getting the ball to him. And I can understand the questions. I think the offense is going to have to take on the role of being your best defense as well, where you're going to have to score a lot of runs. You're going to have to score, obviously you're going to have to score more than the other team, but you're going to have to make it a significant margin at times. Because I can understand the weakness.
That's the concern. And fundamentals, I mean, defensively, they were pretty awful last year too. I mean, that's got to improve as well. That can help the staff. As you know, you throw up some run support, that can help them. That bullpen stays healthy. I think they'll be better than they were a year ago. And maybe you're off and running. We'll see, man. Pitchers and catchers, they're in camp. We can't wait for it. We'll do this again down the road. Always appreciate the time. Thank you, Dallas.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, boys. Enjoy.
You got it. Dallas Braden, longtime MLB pitcher and Starting Nine podcast co-host. Always great to have him on.
Yeah.
And, listen, the 1 through 9 speaks for itself. Everyone knows if they're healthy, the bats should be there.
Yep.
It is the staff. It's the bullpen. You know, you got to pitch to win. We all know that. I mean,
right.
They can't pitch. They can't keep up. I don't see it right now with that staff. I think they're going to have to improve it. I think they're going to need to add to it, but if they can just kind of hang around and be in contention come July, then maybe
should
you pull
okay.
the trigger on something. Yeah, and see where it takes you. Pierre LeBrun, our hockey insider, will join us. Raptors in action tonight. Kyle Lowry will not play. Lowry is out. So you're in tough here. You're looking at Milwaukee on a bounce back from a couple of nights ago. No Lowry going. And VanVleet's probably going to have to play 40 minutes plus tonight. I think he can carry that. but he's got to keep rolling, man. He's got to keep rolling. And Lowry is out tonight, so we'll tee that up. We'll get back into the Leaf game and what happened last night with Pierre LeBrun. Our best bets brought to you by ProLine later in the hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, we'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine later in the hour. And Kyle Lowry will not play tonight, so we'll see if that line will be adjusted. Milwaukee was a six-point favorite a couple of hours ago, and now that Lowry is out, I wouldn't be surprised if that adjusted a little bit. But it's going to be a view into the future. You know, if Lowry's going to walk at the end of the year, seems likely that that will happen. Not a guarantee, but it might. And you're coming back with Van Vliet, Siakam, Ananobi, maybe Norman Powell, and whatever else you can add to the mix. This is what you're going to be dealing with into the future, man. If you're captain, your leader, your go-to guy, not available to you, it's going to be a tough game tonight.
What would Lowry be walking into next year? Would it be like a one-year deal with Philly? Would it be a one-year deal option Clipper? Like, I don't even know what kind of deal that would look like for him.
I think probably a 1-1, maybe, like a team option on the second year or something like that.
And he's from Philly, right? Wouldn't he want to go home, you think?
I could see that. Yep. They're a good team. Likely a pretty good team next year, too. Depends on what he's seeking. Like, does he want to play in his hometown? Does he want to chase another ring? Like, he's playing pretty well this year. Like, he's been pretty good, and he's still taking charges, and he still grinds, and still hit a three, you know. I think he'll have suitors. I don't think there's any disputing that. Will he get a 3 or 4 year deal? More than likely not, unless he wants to go to an awful team, which I don't see why he would do that. He's made so much money. He's had such a great run. But we'll see. Lowry out tonight. Leafs back in action tonight, taking on Ottawa. They're in Montreal, taking on the Habs on Saturday night. Here's our TSN hockey insider, Pierre LeBrun. What's happening, Pierre?
Right on, right on.
Yes. What's going on? You jacked up for the Leafs Sens tonight? Third time in four nights or what?
If this was 1981 in the first round, it'd be the deciding game of the best of three.
That's
but
right.
But it's not 1981 in the first round. It's a regular season game. How about this? I was looking at the Senators ahead of tonight's game. And, you know, sometimes you say something and it's just, it's always been true to me, but Ottawa, no matter what their record is, loves playing the Leafs and they love playing the Habs. Those are their two geographical rivals. They are 3-0 this year against the Leafs and Habs combined. They are 1-10-1 against the rest of Canada.
Wow.
Yeah, makes sense.
Not bad for the rest of Canada, I would say. But
Yeah,
that hurts. I mean, that the Leafs have lost twice to Ottawa. Ottawa's 5 wins this year. 2 of them are against Toronto. And now you got Hutchinson in tonight. Hyman's not going to play. I don't know if it's a barometer game. I don't think it is. I don't think it should be. But if the Leafs look past them and start thinking about Saturday night, Noodles, you brought this up, trap game 101.
It is.
Could be tonight. Kind of feels that way. You've covered the game for a long time, Pierre. Doesn't it kind of feel like everything you would expect to apply to a trap game for Toronto tonight?
Normally I would say yes. But I think the wounds are still fresh from Monday night. That was an embarrassing collapse, and I think that still, you would feel that in that room still, and because of that, you're not looking past Ottawa tonight. In my mind, I could be wrong, and listen, the Noodles may disagree, but I know the Habs game looms large, but I just think after what happened Monday night, which is their version of the Zamboni game for this year, I don't think they're looking past Ottawa for 1 second tonight. And in fact, you know, last night was your typical, let's just take care of our own end and worry about the rest, kind of a smart, conservative comeback game for the Leafs. I think tonight they're going to try and go out and blow the doors out.
Pierre, what are you hearing? Like, I've got some rumblings today I heard from just different people talking to them that there's no way they're getting 56 in. It might be 48. It might be even something like 40. What are you hearing about that, and how would that affect like a trade deadline or team's approach, specifically Toronto's?
Well, the biggest thing, I mean, every time I ask the league this, and I've asked them repeatedly since the start of the year, they insist that their only intention is to get 56 in. But, you know, what else are they going to tell me, to be honest, old dog? So until that moment in time where they feel comfortable sharing something otherwise, that's where they are. The first thing you got to think of is how does that affect the playoff races? I mean, I suspect they would have to go by points percentage over points to determine the standings. That's number one. You know, and beyond that, I mean, listen, in the Canadian division so far, knock on wood, but it looks like everyone's going to get the 56, right? You're really talking about the three U.S. divisions right now. Now, I actually interviewed the NHL schedule maker on Monday for a piece I wrote in The Athletic. And, you know, one thing that he pointed out to me that doesn't get a lot of attention so far is that despite all these rescheduled games because of COVID, they've barely put a dent into their buffer week, which is that week at the end of the regular season in which they reserve the right to delay the playoffs by a year, by a week. There is two games for Monday, May 10th schedule right now, which are rescheduled games, which is 2 days after the end of the regular season on May 8th in theory. Beyond that, so far, and again, knock on wood, because I think they may have to, you know, put a dent into this, but so far, despite all the rescheduled games, the rest of that week is empty. So it is almost phenomenal, to be honest, that they've, you know, jacked around so many games and yet not used the buffer week yet to a certain degree. That might change, though.
Yeah, I've noticed, I mean, you've been consistent with your narrative on Twitter to put point percentage, not points, as you do your standings. Is that something that you just did at the start of the year for yourself, or are you kind of more got an instinct situation from the league going, that's kind of where we're headed? Regardless, if the North Division gets 56 games, you can still do that. But, you know, if one of the divisions only gets to 48, mm-hmm. and you got to break it down that way. If one of the divisions only gets to 48, I would think they would have to do point percentage for everyone, correct? You can't just do it for the one division.
Yeah, I agree. And in particular, it's going to come to a head in the Final Four. When you get to the league semifinals, I keep saying conference finals. There are no conferences right. this year. So when you get to the league semifinals, the way they're going to do the matchups is 1-4, 2-3 based on regular season records. And if not all four teams obviously have played 56 games, it has to be points percentage in my mind. But the reason I once a week do the points percentage standings is for whatever reason, I think there's a lot of fans that have a hard time finding that. And it's the only true measure of what's going on right now. You got teams that have played almost half the number of games as other teams. It makes zero sense to look at points. It tells you nothing. You have to look at points percentage to know how your team is tracking. And it's not just for this year. I've said for years that that's how the NHL should be establishing their standings for fans, because it's not a win-loss league. It's a points-picking-up league.
Right.
You could lose 10 games in overtime and go 500 in theory during that stretch because you picked up 10 out of 20 points. So yeah, it bugs me that this is one of my things that I'm on forever and forever.
Well, it's crazy you say that, because that's something that, you know, I've been trying to harp is the lack of games for certain organizations down south. Is this something that the league wants to, you want to get to a certain amount of games, but moving forward, is that going to be the thought process for the league? Are they going to take some of the stuff that they maybe have experimented here with the shortened season and go, hey, I like that? And then the other thing I'll add on to it is, because you're playing each other so many times, like I just looked at your points percentage. Like if that fourth spot is going to be up for grabs in the Pacific Division or up north or whatever we're calling it, up north, the Northern Division, it could come down to a ridiculous amount of tiebreakers, like head-to-head, all of these types of things. Like, it's not just going to be goals for and goals against. Like, it might be season series head-to-head against that particular organization.
Yeah, no, that's true. And to your original question, Noodles, I do think the league has taken stock into what is working and what's not working in this very unique season. In fact, you know, I quoted Gary Bettman recently in the piece I wrote about the All-Canadian Division, because I know Hayes loves the All-Canadian Division, so I wrote about it.
Oh, yeah.
And Bettman talked about how they're not ignoring it, that they see the reaction that it's had. Now, there's no way I think there's going to be an All-Canadian Division after this year, but I think, to your point, Noodles, one thing that could come back in the normal NHL, the normal schedule, is a further unbalanced schedule where there's more All-Canadian matchups. You know, and in fact, you know, Mark Chipman, the Jets chairman, told me that's something that he really hopes to see. It's not good enough to have the Leafs and the Habs only twice in his building every year, that he wants to see that more often. So that's one thing. The other one is the baseball-type scheduling. that one's going to get tense because I think the players like it. I think the people who worry about the bank accounts for teams like it because it's a lot less costly on travel. You know, it's like $25,000 an hour, I think, to run your team charter.
Yeah.
But the people who don't like it are the people that market teams and worry about ticket sales too, that the second time you get Nashville, like I'd say the Calgary Flames next year, and you got Nashville on a Saturday and Nashville on a Monday, that second game, people in the ticket business will tell you is a tough sell. And so you got different interests there when it comes to the baseball scheduling where not everyone's on the same page. I hope we see it in some cases, not all over the schedule, but I think it makes sense when the Leafs go to California or certain places that they get all their games out of the way in certain places.
Yeah, I think they should take that into consideration. And I also don't think it's a coincidence that for the first time in about 50 years, the Leafs have the most points, and all of a sudden it's points percentage that we're going to be using moving forward.
Well, they also have the best percentage in the North Division.
They do. And you look at their division, in all seriousness, Florida's number one in terms of points percentage right now. They're tied with Boston. And then Toronto, Tampa, those are your top four. And they'd all be in the same division. The Habs, I believe, are eighth. So five of the top eight teams by points percentage would all be in the Atlantic Division.
The Habs might be on the bowl if this were normal standings. Yeah,
right.
Crazy.
Which exactly. I have to believe it's going to continue next year when we get back to a conventional schedule, and that might be where the gripes come into play. If there is an imbalance one year where all the Canadian teams are playing each other a little bit more than they usually would, and let's say there's three teams up here that are just awful, and you know Boston's like, wait a minute, we got to play New York more, and they're really good. And are we going to play the Islanders or whatever it is? You know, and I guess that's just what comes with the territory. We've had this conversation before. It's entertainment. It's about making money. Do what's going to get, you know, the most ratings and the most money, basically. That's what they should be in for. And the players should understand that, too.
No question. And one thing you should know is that over time, that's one of those debates/discussions that the commissioner really doesn't like being in the middle of because it puts them in the middle of owners. When they did the last realignment, in 2012, 2013, that was a gong show for him.
Right.
In terms of Detroit finally coming east with Columbus. One thing to remember about next year, by the way, and this flies under the radar because we reported on it a couple of years ago at the Board of Governors, but you really don't think about it. But with Seattle coming in next year, just remember that Seattle actually replaces Arizona in the Pacific Division when we go back to the normal divisions. And Arizona slides to the Central starting next year. Mm. That is actually a realignment that was already voted on by the governors.
Well, we got a long way before we get to that, and let's just continue to enjoy the ride. We'll see what happens tonight throughout the weekend. It's always great to do this, buddy. We'll do it again next week. Thank you for this.
Right on. Thanks, boys.
You got it. Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider. And we didn't ask him about the whole Hart Trophy thing, which has been somewhat of a theme today, just based on what Thornton said postgame last night. But I think Pierre might have a vote. With that. We'll put him on the spot.
You know how many people are voting on major awards that don't watch a lick of any hockey at night? I love it.
I think it's mostly, isn't it the Writers Association? Like, I voted last year.
You had to vote for the Hart?
Yeah, but I know what you do.
You actually watch games, though.
Yeah, exactly. I watch hundreds of games a year.
I'm just saying, Jamie, I guarantee you there's people voting for that have no idea what the hell Jonathan Huberdeau is doing right now.
You're right.
Because there's a pandemic and they just don't watch.
And they focus on their own market. Those people get weeded out because they're easy to tell because they voted their second-line centerman up for the Selke.
Well, they don't get weeded out. Nothing happens to them. They just wing
it. They still have the vote. It counts watches every game.
But it doesn't – like those votes, those are outliers. Because
they don't count. In the
you
big
see,
picture,
50 votes for Bergeron and then one for Nazem Kadri.
But what it has done in the past is it can take away from someone else. Like if it's based on the accumulation of your standing, in other words, you vote for your top five, and the consensus is like the same four guys are in every single one, but then all of a sudden some guy takes one guy out to put in their guy,
right?
Then all of a sudden they drop, you know, that guy who should. Of legitimately got the vote doesn't have enough of an accumulation in terms of the number to get where he's supposed to get to. And that's where it can have a legitimate effect on it.
Ask Jarome Iginla.
Yeah.
where the Montreal media were a bunch of idiots and didn't put him either on their ballot or put him way down so that their guy could win.
So Theodore could win.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that,
ridiculous. Absolutely
sucks,
ridiculous.
But, yeah. I mean, someone this year, based on where we're at right now, a great player is going to win it. Like, I think the biggest surprise of the names we mentioned earlier would be Huberto. If he kept it up, Huberto's had a great run, undervalued because of the market he plays in. Like, he's had 97-point season. I think he's had 92 and 97 or something the past couple of years.
Yeah, he's had a couple 90-point seasons. He is
outstanding,
a great star.
Dude, if he's playing with the Habs right now, he's a lock for the heart.
Well, he's in that conversation.
He's in the same conversation.
I know, but it'll be on steroids so much more. It's not even funny.
What's going to happen here, though, it's going to get so loud. If this theme continues where Matthews keeps scoring and McDavid keeps doing what he's doing, the two markets are going to be – they're going to meet in Winnipeg and just have a Gangs of New York fight at Portage in Maine. And that's what's going to happen. It'll be meet me at Portage in Maine, Gangs of New York, opening scene, and Toronto fighting for Matthews, Edmonton fighting for McDavid, let's go. Yeah. And that's what's going to happen for the next 30 games, 40
games.
Mean,
yeah, but that's the
crazy
part about
it. I support it.
It will. The crazy part about it is there'll be loud noise for Patrick Kane if Chicago somehow makes the playoffs.
It should be.
And you know, Huberto and who knows, Marchand. And, like, there's – It's
Nick
not
Backstrom's
just going to be north
off to
of the
a
border.
Start.
What's that?
Backstrom's off to a great start in Washington. He's doing.
Yeah, he has.
He's putting up massive numbers anyway.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, the Leafs are doing some interesting things here. This is the second time on a back-to-back Freddie Anderson is not even dressing.
Perfect. I love it. You're not. Yeah. You have no chance of going in. You're not putting your gear on. Stay home.
Yeah, that's kind of a new – this is new era, I would say. Wouldn't you suggest, Noodles? This is new school.
It is in
Joseph
the sense
Wall
where there's
will
no
back
chance.
Up tonight.
There's no chance that, you know, Hutchinson tweaks his knee and Anderson's got to come in cold and that hurts his body. And, like, it's a flat out, we're either leaving you home or you work out with the goalie coach this morning and you don't even see the rink. So, I mean, it's good. The difference is Hutchinson has to do the job because you don't want to have to go to Joseph Wall tonight. That's the difference.
Yes.
Like, that's, you
stay
know,
healthy and play well.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then another interesting maneuver here is Kerfoot is moving up because Hyman is out of the lineup. So you can see it up there on TSN too. Matthews, Marner, and Thornton will stick together. Tavares and Nylander will stick together. But Kerfoot is going to play left wing with Tavares and Nylander. And then Engvall, VC, Mikheyev on the third line. Patan, Boyd, Spez on the fourth. Not exactly a stacked bottom six. Right. But I think it might shine some light on what could happen in the future. If they see Kerfoot as basically the next option to move up as opposed to making sure you've got the middle of the ice, you know, solidified.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder about that in the future if you're looking to still mix some things up. You know, like, what if that connects tonight? Do you stick with it?
And that fourth line might actually be your third line tonight. That Boyd kid, I like him. I think
he's playing pretty well.
I think he's establishing himself. I don't think he's going to be a point-producing player, but he is an NHL player. And how long they've been looking for a right-handed shot, fourth-line centerman that can put – he was on the first unit power play.
Yeah, he was.
Yep. So it's like he can play. He's good to watch. So let's see how much ice time they get. They could ultimately – the way things are going for Engvall and Mikheyev, that's basically their fourth line, and we'll see how much ice time that third line gets.
And what about, like, are you guys concerned about the legs on Jumbo? Didn't he play close to 20
played
last
almost
night?
Almost 20 last night. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, he could do it in a – he can do it last night.
It's interesting to just watch
tonight.
Him tonight, Jamie, just to see what he's got in the tank.
That's what I mean, because are you going to follow that up on Saturday, too, in a big game against Montreal, having Jumbo at, you know, with a 19 wrapped around it, too. That's three games in four nights for a 40-plus-year-old.
You wonder if a couple of months from now, if they're comfortably in, he's doing the Freddie Anderson routine where it's like you're not even coming to the rink in your gear. It's like putting your gear on, just get ready for the playoffs.
I would. That's why you got to get this game tonight. And that's a great point. Like in that one point they missed out on Monday, it shouldn't matter, but it could allow you down the road to go into load management. You know, if you can get yourself a big enough –
perfect time
here.
To do it, man.
I just don't
season.
Think.
I'd
ahead. Be honest, and this is no disrespect. I don't think there's going to be a buffer in this division.
Well,
like it's just
there is
too
right
jammed
now,
up. I know, but they've got Winnipeg, and these guys have two games on them. So yeah, Montreal, but, like, you know what? They win their games, all of a sudden they're 2 points back, and you've got how many? Seven head-to-head against them still?
Yeah.
I don't think they're ever going to be a 10-point buffer. There might be a 10-point buffer over a team. I don't think there's going to be a 10-point buffer between first and second in this division all year long.
No, I'm not saying first and second necessarily, but if there's a 5 or 6 point buffer and you're playing Ottawa again, then do it. You know, right. Load management. And also, if there's not going to be any fans in the stands anyway, then you're not really – it's not that you're fighting necessarily for first or second. You might just be fighting for home ice in the first round. Where if there's a big enough buffer on first and third or second and third, but listen, they haven't played enough games to create a buffer.
That's
but
what I mean.
We keep bringing up the points percentage. The Leafs are 765. The Habs are 667. Edmonton's third at 556, or I guess Winnipeg's third at 559. That is a pretty substantial buffer. Like, you extrapolate that over the next 30 games, if everything stays on pace, that's going to be a big buffer.
Like, it will, but I don't know if that'll stay on pace. They're all playing each other.
Yeah.
So as you sit and as we sit, you know, the Leafs are going to have a time where they don't play from Saturday to Friday, and the other teams are going to catch up in games and go, you know, even if a team goes 600 in that time, all of a sudden 3 or 4 points are chipped away. Like, those point percentage are going to be important, and I'm not discounting it. I'm just saying that I don't see – they're all playing each other. There's four-point games every night.
Of course.
We're going to be watching the standings, like, every day, the whole year long. Like, I don't think
– Well, and I don't think – anyone is suggesting, I certainly am not, that Matthews and Marner are taking a week off. Thornton, I think, is a different situation. I think even if you're in a race, you might say we got to do it. You know, if he's really starting to lag or he really needs a break,
right. You
got to do it. And I think with Freddie Anderson, the same thing. Like, if you're not playing tonight, you're not even going to back up. Stay home.
Right.
I think you can consistently do that and stick to that process and theme.
Regardless of the standings.
Regardless of the standings. Exactly. Like Bogosian.
Maybe he's not staying home, Hazy, after what happened a couple years ago. Or no, maybe, like, I was just thinking of the goaltender that went in there for Carolina. He's probably in the building, wouldn't he be?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Make sure that you don't have to go to the e-bug.
Yeah.
Make sure you got that third guy in the building. That's true.
Yeah.
We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Lowry is out tonight. Raptors at Milwaukee again. We'll get to that. Leafs at home against Ottawa tonight. We'll get to that as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Jersey, you know, they're playing again, which is a positive for them, but they're in Boston tonight, and they got a win when they came out of the whole COVID shutdown. I don't see it continuing. I'm on Boston tonight. I have to go over in the Leaf game. It's a big number, but I'm going to go over. And I'm on Washington at home against Buffalo. The same thing. I think the Sabres continue to just get hit. I do. I'll throw down 20. You can score 63. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. ProLine is the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, put your knowledge on the line. Kyle Lowry out tonight. Malachi Flynn has been recalled, but Lowry is out. And this is going to be a tough one tonight. I believe that number has adjusted. Someone sent me a note. It went from 6 to like 7.5 in favor of Milwaukee.
Go in at 6, you still, that's the number you got in.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It doesn't matter what happens with injuries or anything.
Nope. Wow. Whenever you lay the bet down, you got it. But, yeah, we'll see. I mean, this would be the most impressive win of the year, easily. And the one on Tuesday was right at the top for me. The one in Brooklyn a week and a half ago was right there, too.
I got a tough one. I got a tough feeling about this, brother.
I do, too. I mean, I can't argue it. It feels like you're happy to get out of there 500, leaving Milwaukee. But
was it yesterday or the day before? You weren't scared of anybody.
I'm not scared. Not scared. I'm just not a believer. Two very different descriptions.
Oh, not a believer now.
It's
different every day. You're different every day.
There's a little subtle change, so you can keep just chew.
I can't wait until
right
you start throwing that football helmet around your office about the Blue Jays coming up. That'll just be another spicy meatball for you.
Yep.
I hate their pitching. I hate this guy. I can't stand this.
Springer,
then the next day will be, God, these guys can hit. God.
I'm a fan. I really, you know what? That Tanner Roark, he just needed a bounce back opportunity.
Dude, we should get that guy on a Jerry's percentage. The percentage of that guy showing up and being a contributor starting Major League Baseball pitcher.
25% right now.
Lower.
But, yeah, it
you
should be.
You see him wheel off the mound last year
it
talking?
It was a mess. Mess. Yeah. Like Keith Hernandez was shocked. And that's saying
Keith
something.
Hernandez.
Been getting his tits
yeah,
lit.
He really has.
I love that clip. What a great way to end the show.
Yeah.
Leafs in action tonight. Enjoy that. Raptors in action tonight. Enjoy that as well. Bunch of games in the NBA and NHL. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games. We are back tomorrow at
4 p.m. Hazy, your list makes you a traitor.
We'll chat then.